And please give a warm welcome to our speaker tonight, Joyce, from the Friends of Bill W. Home Group.
Threw me off there. I was expecting to have to read chapter 3 more about alcoholism. Things have changed. My name is Joyce, and I am an alcoholic. It is through good sponsorship, being a member of a home group, practicing the principles of the program, and asking God every day to direct my thoughts and actions, that I have not had a drink since July 9th, 1995. And for that, I'm very grateful. And I'll tell you right up front, in case you're wondering about, you know, do I sound like I'm from the South? No, I am not from the South. The country I come from is called the Midwest, and it might say a lot of things about me. It's cold there right now. But anyway, so our stories disclose in a general way what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. Or what we are like now. So I'll tell you a little bit about what it was like. You know, I grew up, I lived on a farm. I went to a one-room school for kindergarten. And if you ever watched The Little House on the Prairie, you've got the one-room school, the bucket with the water, and you dip in a dipper and take a drink of it. There were outhouses outside of the building, one for boys and one for girls, and you know, it was that was my kindergarten. But I lived on a farm, and I had my grandmother across the road up the hill at the family farm. And when I was, you know, for those first 10 or 11 years of my life, she was there living with us and are living across the road. And she got sick and had to go to a nursing home, and I really miss that. But even when I was very small, my grandmother, I think she was starting to get some of that elderly dementia, but her and I communicated fine. You know, a two-year-old grandmother, we got along really well. But I felt really bad. I felt a loss when she passed away. Shortly after I turned 10 or so, my mother went to work, and that put I'm an alcoholic, and I wasn't drinking at age 10, but alcoholics tend to already have this idea that we want things, we want them now. I wanted it my way. And my mother going to work put a big change in our lives, because now I was the person in charge of getting my brother and sister ready for school and getting us all fed our bowl of cereal and making sure we got out the door at the right time. And my mother would come home from work, and she'd be really tired because she had to be there at 7 in the morning, so she was leaving at some really, really ridiculous hour. But she didn't really feel like doing a lot of work after she'd worked all day. So I started doing the cooking, and you know, I just felt like my childhood is gone. You know, here I am 10 or 11 years old, and I have to do all this stuff. I mean, I had learned a lot from my grandmother as far as baking. I was very young when she was teaching me to bake stuff, and that was different than having to make all the family meals every night. I just felt like, you know, this is work. You know, why would I, why do I need to be doing this now? I want to just read, play music, whatever, but I did not want to have to be doing the breakfast prep and evening meals. My dad was happy, though. He thought I was a good cook, and he was so happy with my food. My mother was a little unimaginative with cooking. But anyway, you know, that was going on for a couple of years. And, you know, in that intervening couple of years, I had occasionally picked up a drink with girlfriends. And the first time, and I remember it so well, I was over at my girlfriend's house, and we wanted to have something to drink for the sole reason of getting drunk, or at least getting to feel good. We didn't know what that was like, but we thought it would be good, you know? And we had nothing. Her parents didn't drink. And we looked through the house. They had cooking sherry in the refrigerator. Cooking sherry is sherry with salt. So we drank some of that. It was awful, but, you know, we drank it anyway. And it did a little bit to us, you know. But I found that with the right connections of friends, you know, girlfriends at school and getting together at the beach or something that, I say beach, but there was a lake that had sand, not a beach like the other one. Yeah. This was a lake from a dammed up river and had sand. That was our beach. And so we'd go there and somebody would have something that we could put into our, you know, our soda, whatever kind we were drinking. And it was just a little bit of fun, but not a lot of drinking, okay? But a couple of more years of me taking care of my brother and sister and doing the cooking, and I just felt like, you know, I just want to escape this life. And I met a guy, and I met him at a dance, and he was going to be going into the Army, and his mother kind of pushed us together. And what happened is that just before I turned 17, we got married. It seemed like a good idea at the time. Thought, you know, I'm so overwhelmed with all this stuff that I have to do here with the home and everything. So getting married seemed like a good idea. You know, I didn't think it through. You go off and you're now married and you have all of that to do for yourself, you know, the cooking, the cleaning, everything. I don't know. I just wasn't thinking. But the best thing about it is that at that age, I was not old enough to drink in Iowa. But in Germany, you know, you can. So going out to parties at night on the weekend and you could have beer delivered to the house by the case. They would deliver it to your door. It was fantastic. Buy anything. And so my drinking really took off in Germany. I didn't drink a lot. It just, you know, it's usually just social. But that took place. You know, we did the best we could. Neither one of us should have gotten married at that time. I really wasn't ready. For me, it was an escape, and who knows why he wanted to. But anyway, we stayed over there and for about a year and a half, and then came back to our hometown, and things were not good. Without the structure of the military, he's now my ex-husband, but he went off to, he wanted to hang out and be young, you know, again, just like I had wanted to. And so he started hanging out with his friends, and they would have drinking parties and things like that. And I'd go along, and, you know, the worst thing, though, that happened is that he introduced me to some young woman, and she seemed to be kind of hanging on to him. And, you know, I found out from one of the people at the party that you know, he's having a fling with this girl, and why he's thinking I need to know her, I don't know. But you know, that's the kind of things that were going on. And it wasn't really a good thing to do if you want to have a nice marriage, but anyway, but both of us were drinking, and that does not help anybody. So anyway, drinking parties, and I don't think I drank at home just for no reason. I wasn't quite there yet. But then we had a child, and we had another one, and our ability to hold a family together and a marriage together, it was really going downhill. And we split up and got divorced, okay? And about 6 weeks later, we got married again. We had not gone to counseling. We hadn't talked about the problems. We hadn't done anything. We just decided that, oh, yeah, we should do this, okay? Kids, whatever. So we got married again. And the second time around, it was even worse. And there was a lot more drinking. And now I started drinking at home. I developed a love for watching football on Sunday, and it was a reason to drink in the afternoon. So I started that, and even when I was telling myself that I'm not drinking right now, I stopped, I wouldn't have anything, I would still be drinking. The eggnog. This is the season for eggnog. Well, yes. I made it from scratch. You know, you pour some cream and sugar and an egg into a container, and then you add a lot of rum, and it was really good. You can't buy that at the grocery store in the carton, but when I drink that stuff, it's eggnog. You know, I didn't really consider that I was drinking. I just was drinking eggnog, but I was drinking at home, and then this, you know, we went on that way for a number of years, and it was just it was really tough. In that time, though, and I'll never understand why my ex-husband was an alcoholic, but I'll never understand why a hardened alcoholic would have encouraged me to go ahead and go to college, because I wanted to go to college, and I was thinking of going into nursing at the time. And he thought, oh yeah, this would be a great thing. You know, you can do that. And I think he liked bragging about the fact that he's putting his wife to college. So I went off and started doing that, and I did really well. And I got a scholarship to a four-year school after I had gone to a community college. And so I went on to do that. And excuse me. And I changed my direction and went into education instead. And it was a couple of years of that. And I finished and I went off to get a job. And with both of us, with me working, and he was not happy about me being gone. But I was out working, and things just went downhill, and so we split up permanently. But while I was at that job, because I had a biology degree, I had a chemistry minor, I decided when things were falling apart that I would look for a job somewhere far away, okay, far away. And so I got a job in New Jersey, and we were in the middle of splitting up our marriage, and so I moved off to New Jersey, and I was there a very short time. I think I got there the second last day of April, 1995, and if you remember, if you were taking notes, I had my last drink on July 8th. So in that short period of time, I found where to get stuff to drink, and every day, you know, come home from work, stop and get it, bring it home, and just sit by myself and drink at night. And I did that until my daughter got out of college for the summer and came out, and we went out to eat, and I could not drive. After I had these, I don't know how many ounces, large glasses of Bass Ale. It was nice, and it was just too much for me. And I think I was thin at the time, and so two of those big cups of Bass Ale was too much. She had to drive us home. Next day, she was telling me, "Mom, you know, if you started drinking again, and she never knew how much I drank, but you started drinking, and we don't get along, and you should just stop." And I thought, well, let's think about this. You know, if I stop drinking, it's July, and I was feeling really crummy from 4th of July on a boat drinking. She would be going in August back to college. So I thought, well, I can, you know, for a month or so, I could do this. Mm-hmm. So I agreed to stop drinking. What I did, I thought about it every day. I joined a group for divorced and separated people, and we'd sit there and talk and share things, you know, and I must have sounded as nutty as a fruitcake, because after one of the sessions, this one man walked up to me and said, "You know, you should go to an AA meeting. It sounds like you would really enjoy it. You meet people, and you could learn about how they deal with life, and you could talk to them about things that bother you. And I bet you'd really like it." So off I go a couple of days later to my first AA meeting, and it was a speaker meeting, you know, like this. It was in a church in a little town with a crazy name, and I had no idea what to expect. I didn't think of myself as an alcoholic. I didn't drink around the clock. I did not drink usually did not drink large quantities, so I never had an inkling that I might be an alcoholic. But what I did was, I went to this meeting, and there were two speakers. They were from the very industrial section of New Jersey out on the East Coast. And the first one was talking about all kinds of stuff. And, you know, I'm not listening. I'm looking around the church, and I'm looking at the people, and I'm eating my cookie and drinking my coffee, and just really not quite calm yet. And then the second speaker came up and started talking about stuff, and I heard it. And even though he was talking about a totally different kind of life than what I had in the Midwest, I'd never taken a drug. That was not a prescribed pill, and I took those correctly. So he's talking about taking drugs and drinking with them, and guns, and losing jobs, and having car wrecks, and losing a driver's license, and all of this horrible stuff. I never had done any of that stuff, but he was talking about how bad he felt, and how, you know, he was always trying to really hang on to stuff and get people to just follow the directions that he wants, and everything would be fine. And, you know, and that's how I was. I really, really tried to just get everybody, you know, like my kids, my ex-husband, you know, if you just do things the way I want them done, everything would be happy, and I'd be happy. And, you know, I carried this through to my job, and I'm sure the people I worked with hated me because I always wanted to have things done my way. And I had good ideas, but they didn't always like them. So anyway, I don't even know where I was at that, but it was just something about that guy. He said something that kind of clicked with my head, and I still didn't think I was an alcoholic. But you know, I can go to these meetings and listen to these people, and it sounds like a good way to spend the evening, because I knew nobody except for going to work. So they told me to go to a meeting the next day, told me where to go. So the next night I go to a meeting, and there was not a woman in the room. It was all men. They were all grizzled veterans. They all looked like they'd been around for 20 or 30 years. I mean, they were old, all of them. And I found out later that the women had all gone off to do something They went to a meeting together, but somewhere else that night. Somebody was celebrating or something. And the thing that was very memorable, before they really got going, they would go around the room, say their name, and say, "Oh, I'm an alcoholic." Well, when it came to me, I wasn't going to sit there and bring attention to myself, you know, the only female in the room, and I'm worrying about bringing attention to myself. But I wasn't going to just say nothing. So I said my name, and I said, "Well, I'm an alcoholic." Now, I still did not believe that I was one, but I was going to say that so I could blend in with all these old men. Mm-hmm. So I did that, and after the meeting, I can remember the guy's name. He was called Treetop Tommy. He was one of those guys that his job was to cut down trees. They called him Treetops. And it's a kind of name that you can remember after that many years. But he told me about, he said his wife goes to a meeting on Friday, and where that was, excuse me, and that I should go to a meeting tomorrow, and a couple of places I could go, and it would be really important to do that, and also to find a woman that I thought had it together and seemed to be doing a good job, and ask her to be my sponsor. I didn't know what that was all about yet, but I went off to a meeting the next night, and it was a fairly good-sized group. They started together, and then they, after about 10 minutes, they broke off a small group of beginners, and the beginners went off into the corner of the room, and the rest of the people stayed there. So, you know, I was shuttled off to the beginners group, and I stayed in that beginners group for months, and you know, I found out that we were having our little beginners group one night, and there were some guys in the group that evidently had been involved in the criminal justice system in the prison, and they were talking. This one guy was saying that the judge said he could go to a rehab, or he could go to jail, and he chose to go to jail because he knew he could get drugs there. And I looked at him and said, "Are you kidding me? You can get drugs in jail in prison?" And he must have thought I was as dumb as a stick. And yeah, and then he explained to me about how they get drugs in the prison, and I was just amazed. I did not know that could happen. You know, I didn't know people could do that. So, gosh, that was enlightenment for me. But anyway, I didn't really do all of the things very well at the beginning there. I did go to a meeting every single day. I did that for probably 3 years. Went to a meeting every single day, and a couple of weeks into it, I had asked one woman to be a sponsor, and she said, "Well, I really don't know how to sponsor women because I don't have one myself, and I've not done any of this work that everybody's talking about." So I knew that I had to have somebody that knew what they were doing. So I just thought, "Well, I'll float around until I find somebody." And I don't know, maybe a couple of days later, this young man said to me after the meeting, when you share, you don't sound like you think you're an alcoholic." And I don't think I'm an alcoholic. He said, "Well, but you probably are. If you're here, you probably are. Why don't you get a sponsor and start doing the work, and maybe you'll find out." And I did ask a young woman, and we could not have been more different. She had long flowing hair. She wore this long, loose kind of moon style dress, and she was barefooted. Now, I would never, never think of walking on a floor where people had walked with their dirty shoes. Never. I am fixated about dirt. And and yet here she was, barefoot, the long hair and everything. And I asked her to be my sponsor, and So we started that relationship, and everything she told me to do, I didn't really hear her the first time. She'd have to repeat it, and the phone call, I called too early. She worked late, and so she didn't like to get up early. Don't call at 8 o'clock in the morning, you know. We got those things worked out, and we met every week, and we would go to a meeting on Friday together. She wanted me to get a commitment at the meeting, and she said, you'll be the secretary. Well, the secretary of the group has to go to the post office and collect mail. And of course I had objections. I always had objections when she told me something. I said, I work up there, and I live over here, and now we're down here at this town that has the meeting. I don't know how that's going to work out if I'm supposed to be the secretary. You know, how am I ever going to get the mail? Don't worry, it'll work out. So after work on Friday, I come zooming down the highway. I go to the post office. They are still open. And so I get the mail every day, and we have something to eat with her little girl, and then we go off to the meeting. And we did that, for quite a few months. We did started doing the step work, and she was not a big book step person. I didn't know that at the time. You know, I didn't know there was a difference. But she had me doing some kind of a workbook for working the steps. And, you know, step one was about 127 pages, and you had to read something and write down things. And it took forever. It took me forever. But I'd work at this every week, and I'm sure that it helped. You know, I really am sure that it helped. And so we did that, and, you know, we kept going with the steps. And I remember that we were going to sit down and do the fifth step, and she wanted to do it outdoors at a park next to a pond. Now, the park had geese all over the place, and she wanted to sit on the ground without a blanket under us. And I thought, oh my gosh, there's no place there that I want to sit. But, you know, sit we did. And this being my first time with the steps, and the two of us not reading out of the big book, we didn't have good directions. You know, it was just what she was kind of putting together. And right now I can say absolutely that I had not done a very good fourth step. I did the best that I could. I also had not read page 61 and 62, where it says that because of our selfishness, that we do things to people and they retaliate. And, you know, I did not know that every single problem that I had in my life, every relationship that I had made a mess of, was because I had done something to that person. And so it was really hard to do the fifth step when I had done such a horrible job on the fourth. But, you know, we kind of muddled through, and we didn't finish that day. We had to put it off until the next week. And so we finished it up the next week. But she had to really ask a lot of questions, and it shouldn't have been that way. You know, I should have been just willingly talking about this stuff because I understood. Well, I still didn't really understand a lot of it. So we did the best that we could. But after about a year, this woman had decided to move to California because she had a brother living there, and she needed her little girl to meet the uncle because she felt that, you know, her little girl should have some family. And she told me that I am not capable of staying sober without guidance, and I need somebody that I can see. Just talking to her on the phone would not be enough. I need to have somebody that I can see. And so I needed to get a sponsor. And I had an interim sponsor that was good, except that her brother died and she went out. She went out, you know, she'd been in for quite a few years. I can't remember how many it was at the time, you know, like 15 years, 20, she'd been in a while. But her brother died unexpectedly and she couldn't handle it. And she went out again, so, you know, there I was. Well, I picked up my sponsor, Anne Marie, and Anne Marie was like a drill sergeant, and she said, well, you'll come over to my house. She lived in Maine. Oh, you'll just come over and we'll do them this weekend. We'll start the step work. So I'm in New Jersey, and it's a 7.5-hour drive, so after work, I go zooming up to Maine, and we started doing the step work, and it's incredible what being in the steps again and having been in meetings for all those years, what it can do to you to really get you the idea of how to do stuff. So I really understood a little bit more. She explained a lot, and we did steps 1, 2, and 3 in the morning, and she sent me up to the guest room upstairs, and it had a desk, and she said, sit here and you can do your fourth step. It'll probably take you about 45 minutes. And I was thinking, took me, you know, weeks the first time I tried doing that. But it actually was pretty easy because I had clear-cut instructions from the big book. She gave me papers. She said, you know, these are the things you need to be looking for. These are the questions you ask. And write down what the problem was and what was your part in it. And of course, she had already drilled into me about how things were my fault, you know, the things that I had done and the problems that created for my relationships and how those people had come back to hurt me. And so it really was a lot easier. I mean, I could look at my ex-husband, and I thought every problem in my life was his fault. I mean, that's how I was when I first came into the program. Absolutely every issue that was in our lives came from him. But I had to go back to when I first met the person. And you know, at that time, remember I was, you should take notes, remember I said that I was doing the cooking and getting my brother and sister ready for school, and I was doing all that stuff. And I was just really obsessed with the idea of getting out of the house and getting off the farm. And so I was, you know, I wasn't really interviewing guys that could be possible help me here, but, you know, I had my eyes open, and I also had a girlfriend that had quit school and went off to live with the boyfriend, and they were getting married or whatever, but I thought, well, gosh, she did that, and she seems pretty happy, you know. So I had to look at the fact that I was really instrumental in getting involved with somebody and then marrying this guy because I wanted to get out of the situation I was in. And when Anne Marie had me looking at that, it you know, I could see how it just kept snowballing, and neither one of us should have been in a relationship. We should not have gotten married young. And it was all because I had this idea that I just needed to get away from my home. You know, I wanted to, you know, bright lights, big city. I don't know what it was. I just wanted to get off the farm and have fun. So my fourth step, I was able to do it in 45 minutes or less. And we sat out by the fire pit. And we had to have the fire pit because the mosquitoes were bad that summer. And we went through the fifth step. And before I went home on Sunday morning from her house, I had gotten up through the seventh step. We just went right through it, kind of like Bill Wilson did. So we did a really good job with it. And then we started talking on the phone every week. We would continue to read the big book, and I was continuing to work on my steps, and it was going really well. Now, when I had to make the amends, I had to write a letter to my ex-husband because he had been pretty physically scary, and she said, under no circumstances should you go in person to make amends. You're going to write him a letter, and I'll kind of look it over. So I write the letter, and I send it to her in the mail or whatever, and she said, no, that's not good. That is absolutely not good. Now, you have to take some responsibility for your actions, and that's not coming out in the slide. Write it over. So I wrote another letter, and she looked at it, and I don't know if there were things that had to be changed a little bit, but sent that off. And you know, I know that when he read the letter, from my son told me this, that he didn't get it. Okay, he did not get it at all. But excuse me, I have such a dry throat tonight. It's been like that for days. But it didn't matter if my ex-husband didn't get it. He did not understand that this was to take care of the past. And, you know, and I'm trying to set things right between us, even though we don't live together anymore. And so I had done the best that I could. But the other people that I owed amends to, that also went a lot better, especially my daughter. I'm still making amends to her by just being helpful and agreeing to things that she wants. But check the time, how are we doing? Good. So it was a lot easier to do my amends to people. And most of them were the same people I had made amends to the first time. But I had done such a botched up job with my steps that I really hadn't grasped all of the parts that I had played and the things that I had done. So this time around, it went really good. And I was glad I could do that. And, you know, over the years, I continued to try to be helpful to my two kids and to my mother and my sister. Never had any problems with my brother, really, but my sister and I had a lot of issues between us, and we had to really work on some of that. I think I did a pretty good job. She passed away 2 years ago, almost 2 years ago, from lung cancer. She had never smoked in her life, and she got lung cancer. Imagine that. But I had been going out to visit her frequently over the 5 or 6 years that since she had found out about the cancer, and we had a lot of get-togethers. And I saw her a few months before she died, and I knew I wouldn't see her again. But about a year before that, we had the best time ever. We got together at a coffee shop in the morning. I said, I'll meet you there at 7. She thought I meant at 9, 7 p.m. No, we're going to go have coffee in the morning. And I think we were there for 3 hours. We talked about all kinds of stuff. And it was the best time I think we ever had. Now, we had spent lots of time talking at coffee shops and over the years, but we just really talked about a lot of stuff from our past and our childhood, and it was really good. So I know that my amends to her had been good. I had to make amends to my son as well, but he was pretty easygoing about everything. He was upset that I had left when I moved to New Jersey. No, I get it. He wanted things to just stay the way they were. Well, his dad and I were, you know, split up, and he wasn't even living at home anymore. He was, can't even think of how old he was at the time, but he was pretty grown up. You know, he was 21 or so, and he just wanted things to be the same. But over the years, we've done a really good job of getting together, and we have a good relationship. On Sunday, we get on the phone, and he's watching the Vikings game. They don't show it here in the afternoon. They always show something else, and so we talk about football, and he just really enjoys that. My dad had died in 1973. My son was almost a year old, and so I couldn't make an amends to him in person, but I wrote him a really nice letter, and I went to the cemetery when I was out and talked to him there. Excuse me. And even though I think my dad was an alcoholic, it didn't matter, because I just needed to talk to him about things that I had done, and try to be helpful to my mother. You know, even after she got married again, I tried to be helpful to her. Excuse me a second. I never thought to bring my water.
There's another one up there.
Hmm?
There's another one up there.
Excuse me. But, you know, I did what I could with my mother, and she passed away in 2017. She had cancer that came back, and when we found out about the cancer 30 years before, you know, my dad had already been gone for a number of years, but I tried to be there for her, and went there the day she had her first initial surgery, and then I took her every week to her chemotherapy, and over the years, I just did whatever I could, you know, to be with her and help her out and stuff. So I think that I did a pretty good job of making amends to her. And when she passed away, she died on St. Patrick's Day of all things. Well, not even Irish. But I was able to go out and see her for a couple of days right before she passed away, so I could talk to her and be there with her and stuff. So that was good. So anyway, I think that I had done much better with the step work. When I was in the program for around 3 years, I got my first sponsee, and she had a medical issue, and if she had followed her doctor's orders, she probably would be alive today, but she unfortunately liked to supplement her medication with smoking cigarettes and over-the-counter drugs, and it just messed up everything, and she didn't make it. But the thing that goes on when you sponsor people, no matter how many of them disappear and you never see them again, I stayed sober. And somebody said that to me, you know, that, you know, you can't make people get sober, but by trying to help them, I can stay sober. So I've tried to do that over the years. And the other thing that has been really important for me is to have contact with my higher power. And since the very first time I had my very first sponsor, one of the things she told me to do was every morning, get on your knees in the morning when you wake up and ask God to keep you sober. And when you go to bed at night, get on your knees again and thank God for keeping you sober for that day. And then she gave me the daily reflection book and told me to read one of those every day. So I started doing that, and I switched books a couple of years into it after that, and got a meditation book for women that are alcoholics, and I just like that, and I'm on my second copy of it now because I wore out the first one. But every morning I get up and I say my prayers and I read my meditation. And when COVID hit and everything seemed a little weird and scary, and we weren't getting out to see people and stuff, I started reading a devotional every morning on top of my prayer and my meditation. And that was just helping me, you know, it just helped me, and I still do that every day. When we go on trips, I have, you know, I take my meditation book, I make sure I have my prayers that I can, I have them written down, I've got a couple of them that I use, but just to make sure I cover everything, I like to do that. So when we go on trips, I go in the bathroom in the morning and I take the little foot towel and I get down and kneel on that. And there's no way that I would kneel on a carpet in a hotel room. Absolutely not. So go in there and use the little foot towel. And you know, it's been working, and it seems so simple. You know, here I've been in the program for 29 years, and I'm doing the same exact things. I go to meetings. I say my prayers in the morning. I sponsor people. I have a sponsor, and you know, it couldn't be any simpler. And yet, if I didn't do all of that stuff every single day, it would have been a mess, because I think that I really needed Alcoholics Anonymous. I really needed the help, and so now I've got you know, God that guides my thoughts and actions. As long as I listen to my higher power, you know, that's key. Sometimes I forget, but everything is going much better. And you know, I mentioned that I have a daughter that's a little difficult sometimes, but we have a good relationship, and I've got three grandkids, and you know, it's just an unbelievably good life, and I'm so glad that I found the program. Because not only did I get sober, and check the time again, not only did I get sober and fix a lot of the relationships by my actions in the program, I also got a chance to change my profession. And I don't think I could have done that without the program. Because I was, except for the first 3 years after I got out of college, I think it was about 3 years, I went into teaching, which is what I had thought I was going to do, but I went into teaching, and I taught at the high school level. And if I had still been drinking, there is no way that I could have faced 25 high school kids, because they are problematic. And some of them quite large. So it was through the work in the program, and being kind of pushed by my sponsor, you know, yeah, that'll be good for you to do. Go off and do teaching, that'll be much better. So I think that I was able to help a lot of kids. They may never have learned the subject to the point where I thought they should have. But I tried to teach them right and wrong, and you know, a few manners, and you know, finish things that you start. Make sure that you show up on time, and that'll carry you a long way. So it was really good. But anyway, that's where I come to be, and now we're here in Virginia, and I try to do the same things here that I started doing when I first came in. So. Anyway, that's all I've got, and thank you very much for having me.
Thank you.
Joyce. Thank you for carrying the message. Very appropriate for this month. And thank you for reminding me that I'm exactly where I need to be. I have to remind myself that relocation is not recovery, because I'm still early in my recovery, and frequently I get this idea that I just need to flip everything upside down and start somewhere else, but that's not always the case. My problem follows me. Our seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Money collected at this meeting covers rent and supplies. The rest is given to Tidewater Intergroup, District 24, and General Services Office. Are there any AA-related announcements? All right, besides speaker meetings on Fridays at 8 p.m., we also have a big book study on Tuesdays, 8 p.m., and we just started the big book. I've asked David, sit down, Anthony, pass out the chips. I didn't mean to ice you.
Well, I was going to say I'm Anthony and I'm an alcoholic. We here at the Into Action Group have a chip system, which is similar to common chip systems commonly used in the Tidewater region. And for starters, you got this white chip. If there was something that you heard in this meeting tonight that makes you want to change, make a change, then we have a white chip here for you. Closest thing to a membership card for Alcoholics Anonymous. We've got some of those cards, but this is the closest thing. The rest of these chips, you actually have to be sober to earn. How about anybody with 30 days of experience? For some reason, I'm going 30 years. It's only 30 days. 60 days, including weekdays, holidays. Okay, now we're starting to use the term months. Yeah. 6 months. Nine months, you get a green chip. 1 year from another home group. We here at the Into Action Group have medallions for those members. You get yourself a medallion, a pony ride, a pinata, and a few other things. Two or more years from another home group. Oh, one more chance for the white chip. Thank you.
Thanks, David.
Thanks, Anthony. Thank you, Anthony and David.
You're okay.
We at the Into Action Group believe that one of the important keys to long-term contented sobriety is effective sponsorship. If anyone here tonight needs a sponsor, please see me or Jake after the meeting, and we'll be sure that you have one tonight. Into Action is a home group. If anyone here tonight is looking for a group to join, we welcome you here. For those of you that will, please join me in saying the Lord's Prayer.
It used to.
court.
Who brought us here tonight?
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
You're so innocent. That was, you know you're not.